Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Governor Scott issues a sudden and urgent call to meet with the Capitol Press Corps in Tallahassee. The governor announced his latest priority.
To speed repairs to the Herbert Hoover Dyke, which is a giant earthen structure that surrounds Lake Okeechobee.
Also tonight, the House budget chief is confident the $4 billion gap between his spending plan and the Senate's can be closed.
I know they have priorities in their budget that we haven't included in ours, and I'm sure throughout the Court of Conference we'll be able to identify what really matters to each chamber and hopefully accommodate one another.
We'll also hear from the Senate's budget point man, and we'll have two stories about veterans, one involving monuments in their honor, the other involving their caregivers. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the beginning of week 7 in the 9-week legislative session, and this is Capitol Report. We start this edition of Capitol Report with Jim Ash because he went flying off to the Capitol late today. A sudden and unusual request from Governor Rick Scott for the Capitol Press Corps here in Tallahassee to assemble in the governor's conference room to talk about a matter of urgent importance. And the speculation was running rife among the reporters. What was this? A sudden compromise perhaps the governor was going to offer to the House and Senate to help them resolve their budget differences. What was going on? You showed up, Jim Ash. What did the governor have to say?
It wasn't as big as some people might have anticipated, but it was unusual coming from a governor who usually keeps things closer to his vest. The governor called us in to announce that he's asking the legislature to appropriate $200 million to speed repairs to the Herbert Hoover Dyke, which is a giant earthen structure that surrounds Lake Okeechobee.
Now, this is, I believe, a federal dike, isn't it?
That's right, Tom. It's a federal facility, but the Army Corps of Engineers hasn't been repairing the structure fast enough to suit Governor Scott. He thinks that with $200 million, he can complete the repairs in 2 years and perhaps wait for the federal government to pay the state back.
You know, we're dealing here with very conservative folks when it comes to fiscal matters. Where would that $200 million come from?
Well, the governor is taking credit now for an announcement last week from the Trump administration that Florida will be getting $1.5 billion in something called LIP, or low income pool, which is essentially money for hospitals.
But this is rather late in the process now. We are entering week 7 in the Florida legislative session. There is only a total of 9 weeks of session time scheduled on the calendar. Is it too late for this additional $200 million to be leveraged into the House and Senate budget plans?
Well, actually not, Tom. It comes at an interesting time. The budget chairs in each chamber have not announced their allocations. There's still time for the leaders in both chambers to factor in $200 million. That would be relatively simple in a budget that's greater than $80 billion. So the timing suggests it's not impossible. And in fact, to make it more palatable, the governor announced at the same time that he'd be willing to support a priority of Senator Joe Negron's as Senate president. President Negron wants to build a major reservoir south of the lake.
All right, so it will probably receive a good reception in the Senate. What about the House?
You know, the House is a question mark right now, especially because the governor and the speaker are at odds, shall we say. Both of them are involved in a political war right now, And the issue that's coming between them is the governor wants to fund something called Enterprise Florida, which manages the state's economic incentives. It's the major business recruiter for Florida.
We are now getting into the major horse trading of the legislative session with the House and the Senate lining up. Just a $4 billion... Just pocket change separating the two budgetary plans. We'll have Regan McCarthy and Sarah Mueller coming on deck momentarily to give us some more insight into how some of those negotiations might play out. But in the meantime, fresh back from Governor Rick Scott's media event this afternoon at the Capitol, Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash. Thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you, Tom.
As the House and Senate prepare to begin hammering out their budget differences, some question whether those differences are too vast for the two chambers to come to a solution before the 60-day session's end. But Regan McCarthy reports leaders in the House are confident it can be done.
A $4 billion gap remains between the House and Senate funding plans. And while that may seem like an unapproachable gulf to some, House Budget Chairman Carlos Trujillo says he doesn't see any insurmountable roadblocks in the way.
I really think we're in a good position. I know the Speaker and the Senate President have a good relationship and speak often. My Senate counterpart is Senator Latvala. We speak often, and I'm confident that we should be able to get a budget done by May 5th.
Trujillo says the chambers are on time and on track compared to previous years. And he says an increase in federal health care funding the state will receive is likely to help both sides come together more quickly.
So the LIP funding, I think that's changed the conversation. We did not include LIP funding in the House budget because we did not have a commitment from the federal government. President Trump's administration is sending $1.5 billion to Florida. That money will be included in the state's, in the House's position, which was previously included in the Senate's position. So that's a big divide there.
LIP stands for Low Income Pool. It's money from the federal government that's used to compensate hospitals and other healthcare providers for the care of uninsured and underinsured patients. The Obama administration had phased out Florida's LIP funding when the state refused to expand its Medicaid program. But last week, Governor Rick Scott announced the state would be receiving enough money to restore the program. But even after that announcement, major sticking points remain between the two budgets. Even within the House, Democrats are raising concerns about funds for an education program called Schools of Hope. Clearwater Republican Representative Chris Latvala is behind the program. He says it'll give kids a way out of persistently failing schools by incentivizing charter schools to set up nearby. He says Jefferson County, where the sole remaining school has been converted into a charter, is an example of why sometimes giving more money to traditional public schools isn't the answer.
If Jefferson County was their own football team, they would have spent all of their money on coaches, on administrators, on equipment that they didn't need, whether it's TVs, different weight room that, look nice, facility. And they would have had one coach for every four football players, because that's what Jefferson County did. Jefferson County prioritized adults before they prioritized the kids. So the money that they were getting wasn't reaching the classroom.
But Tallahassee Democratic Representative Loran Osley worries funding the measure will starve traditional public schools.
We're gutting our traditional public schools. We talked about it all morning, all afternoon. But members, this is a slippery slope. And it's also a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more public schools we defund, the more public schools will fail, and the more public schools this legislature will argue should be turned into charter schools, just like the conversation we had earlier.
The Schools of Hope funding is not yet included in the Senate spending plan, but Trujillo is hopeful that could change. He sees the funding as a possible bargaining chip to use as the Senate works to get funding for a major priority of Senate President Joe Negron, water storage south of Lake Okeechobee, intended to stop toxic algae blooms tied to runoff.
I think there's still room to negotiate. I know they have priorities in their budget that we haven't included in ours, and I'm sure throughout the course of Scriff Conference we'll be able to identify what really matters to each chamber and hopefully accommodate one another.
The next step for the House and Senate spending plans will be conference. It's a process in which leaders from both chambers meet to work out their budget differences. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
So much for the House view, now for the Senate's. Florida Senator Jack Latvala says he's not ready to give up politics after he's term limited in the Senate next year, but he won't say what he's eyeing next. As Sarah Mueller reports, Latvala made his remarks today before members of the Capitol Tiger Bay Club in Tallahassee.
Senate Appropriations Chairman Jack Latvala says if he could be elected to the House for life, he'd turn it down. Latvala calls the House's budget priorities this session discouraging. The Clearwater Republican supports Governor Rick Scott's fight with the House to keep funding tourism and business incentives. Latvala says he was one of the lawmakers who set up Enterprise Florida.
And we took a state agency with state bureaucrats and we replaced it with a business-government partnership to work on bringing the kind of companies in that would provide high-wage, skilled jobs for Floridians for the future.
But Representative Paul Renner, who's sponsoring a bill to kill the agency, says Enterprise Florida favors big companies, and most of them don't live up to their end of the bargain after getting the incentive money.
For every success story, there's a horror story right behind it. We know that the vast majority of the applicants that begin the process of receiving these incentives never complete them.
Senator Latvala also supports Senate President Joe Negron's plan to give more than $300 million to universities. It also cuts community college funding. The House cuts both universities and community colleges. House Speaker Richard Corcoran says he wants to invest more in elementary education instead by creating a system of charter schools, nicknamed Schools of Hope. Latvala says there's likely a deal to be made to get the higher education funding if the Senate is willing to embrace Schools of Hope, a bill being pushed in the House by his son Chris.
And that is, in order to get that through the House of Representatives, the funding and the whole structure, it's going to require us eating some dinner that they've made for us that doesn't taste real good on charter schools and K through 12.
Senator Latvala says too much session time has been eaten up by fighting over economic development and limiting home rule. Latvala refers to one measure that deregulates vacation rentals.
The folks in the House of Representatives primarily who think that they're smarter than anybody elected at the local level, whether it's city commission or county commission, they think they know more than anybody else who's elected by the same people on the same ballot that they are.
Latvala blames term limits for stripping legislators of their independence, although he says he voted for them. Florida approved term limits as a constitutional amendment in 1992. Latvala says term limits give the Senate president and the House speaker much more power.
When I was elected in the 90s and served in the 90s, I loved being in the Florida Senate. There were 40 members in the Florida Senate who were leaders in our communities. We were raised up by our communities. We came to Tallahassee and nobody told a Florida senator how to vote. Today, not so much. Today, there's a lot of pressure on a lot of different issues.
Democratic Representative Lorianne Osley says Latvala is right about term limits increasing the power of the top leaders. She says it's not Democrats who Republicans must compromise with.
That's very clear and on both sides, and certainly on the House side. The Speaker's really driving the train, and it's not really Democrats versus Republicans. It's, you know, at this point, it's, you know, the battles are within the Republican Party.
Senator Latvala says if the House and Senate begin conferencing on a budget compromise at the start of next week, that's a promising sign the session will end on time. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Still to come on Capitol Report, some aren't too happy a bill increasing penalties for veterans' memorial vandals has stalled.
Right now in Florida, there are stiffer punishments for vandalizing a public phone booth, if you can find one, than for desecrating memorial to veterans or first responders.
American troops are often saluted for their service, but what about the service provided by the caregivers of the nation's wounded warriors?
I was in a dark place. Not only was I dealing with being a caregiver, but I had a mom who had cancer and my dad was unhealthy.
And America's pharmaceutical industry faces criticism from many quarters, including Florida's safety net hospitals.
probably the biggest reason is they've got the best lobbyist in the world. Pharma has been outside of those bounds. There's no set pricing.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
Some military veterans are calling on Florida Senate leaders to hear a bill that would increase penalties for defacing any veterans' memorials across the state. Sasha Cordner has more.
The bill makes it at least a third-degree felony to deface memorials honoring the memory of veterans, first responders, and astronauts. Today, the minimum penalty is a second-degree misdemeanor charge. Republican Representative Brad Drake is sponsoring that effort in the House.
The current law says that those that destroy a telephone booth should face harsher penalties than those that destroy a memorial or a veteran's grave.
And after unanimously passing three House committees, it's now headed to the House floor, but it has not been heard in any committees in the Senate. Its first stop would be the Senate Criminal Justice Committee, chaired by a COE Democrat, Randolph Bracey. Sarasota Republican Greg Stubbe, the bill's Senate sponsor, says he's tried to get the bill on Bracey's agenda to no avail. Bracey did not return any calls for comment as to why he has not put the bill on the agenda, but there's speculation it's because of his and the Senate president's stance on juvenile justice issues and wanting to decriminalize adolescents. Here's Bracey after he was first named chair of his committee.
One thing, I do believe that we over-sentence people, juveniles, but also adults for low-level nonviolent crimes, and so that's something I want to address.
While that's a viewpoint shared by James Schillinglaw, the disabled veteran from Jacksonville points out the bill does include memorial vandals doing between 40 and 100 hours of community service.
We don't support children under 18 getting felonies, but this would be a good opportunity for institute community service. Make them clean up the graves that they desecrated. You know, make them mow the yard, weed eat around cemeteries, and have them classes or go to VFWs and meet veterans of the graves they spray painted.
For Pensacola resident Cal Daniel, a young Civil War reenactor, stiffer penalties are warranted. He says he's visited several areas where tombstones and memorials were vandalized.
Underaged or not, these were premeditated. They came out there knowing which ones they wanted to vandalize. And to me, I think that should be more severe.
So Sieber Newsom III, a Yulee resident and veteran, says this shouldn't be a hard bill for lawmakers.
Florida has the third largest veterans population in the nation. But memorials for her veterans are currently under attack, being used as either free billboards for propaganda or canvases for public art.
In fact, in a budget committee last week, Newsom called out Bracey, who was on that panel, for not hearing the bill.
Senator Bracey, are you anti-veteran or anti-police? Because you will not hear Senate Bill 418, the Soldiers and Heroes and Monuments and Memorials Protection Act.
And this week, Newsom, Daniel, and Schillinglaw joined several others to walk to the state capitol Monday with signs depicting those views. While they're all affiliated with groups like Save Southern Heritage Florida and Sons of Confederate Veterans, Schillinglaw says this bill is for everyone.
Because we're monumenting Floridians, you know, black, white, Asian, whatever diversity background is out there.
If Bracey doesn't bring the bill up, they're calling on Senate President Joe Negron to bring it straight to the floor. But according to Negron's office, the decision lies with Bracey. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have drafted more than a million family members into caring for returning wounded and injured troops. For the American Homefront Project, Bobby O'Brien reports on the struggles encountered by those military caregivers, mostly spouses and parents, of post-9/11 veterans.
Inside the home of Ken and Patty Cattart, northeast of Sarasota, a bouquet of bright red roses sits on the kitchen pass-through. Patty bought them for herself.
Ken, he's not very mushy anymore. And I
do get you flowers.
For my birthday.
They laugh now, but it's been 10 long years of learning to live with Ken's loss of memory and cognitive impairment, as his caregiver, Patty, now knows to buy her own flowers.
Ken's not, he doesn't emotionally attach anymore. And so I've learned that I know he loves me. I have no doubt about that. But I also learned to love myself better.
In May 2007, Ken's truck was hit by 2 roadside bombs during his 15-month deployment in Iraq. Only upon his return did Ken learn that he had suffered a traumatic brain injury, a blown disc in his neck, a back injury, hearing loss. The list goes on, from complex symptoms such as seizures to simple things like he can no longer remember how to write his name in cursive.
Things have really slowed down for me. You know, I cannot lift a whole lot of weight. There's a bunch of things that I can't physically do.
His invisible head injury left him with balance problems and other medical issues that prevent him from holding a job or doing even small household tasks. But Ken counts himself lucky. He has all his limbs and can walk. Patty manages his medical appointments, medications, and rehabilitation while raising their 3 children and handling the household. It overwhelmed her a few years ago.
I wasn't suicidal, but I was in a dark place. Not only was I dealing with being a caregiver, but I had a mom who had cancer and my dad was unhealthy.
She learned to care for herself and found a job working from home, helping other military families. Patty also is a fellow with the Elizabeth Dole Foundation that advocates for military and veteran caregivers. Executive Director Stephen Schwab says the post-9/11 caregivers are typically thrown into their roles without time to prepare.
So many of these young spouses in their 20s and 30s suddenly realizing that they're going to be caregivers for probably the next 50 years, if not their entire life, and no one was handing them a manual.
The Dole Foundation surveyed caregivers to find out what they needed most. Respite care topped their list.
These caregivers, especially the post-9/11 caregivers, are struggling from high rates of depression and anxiety. They're incredibly isolated. And when I say isolated, I mean they feel alone, and in most cases are alone without a support system.
The VA has a special program for caregivers of severely injured veterans from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. It provides financial help and other services. Cynthia Fletcher is a caregiver support coordinator at Tampa's James A. Haley VA.
The majority of our veterans in this program do have post-traumatic stress, mood disorders, and TBI. So the caregivers are struggling with those behavioral disturbances, those mood disturbances, which can be very challenging.
The VA secretary asked Congress in March to expand the post-9/11 caregivers program. Of particular concern to caregivers like Patty Catter is what happens 20 or 30 years out if Ken's memory problems worsen and she is unable to cope.
Or what if something happens to me? Who's going to take care of him? Our kids have been very resilient. They love their father, but I don't want that to fall on their plate.
The VA estimated 4,000 caregivers would qualify for its post-9/11 program, but within 4 years, almost 25,000 were enrolled. So the VA has been scrambling to fill the immediate demand, leaving little time to think about the caregivers' long-term needs. I'm Bobby O'Brien in Tampa.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, back during his campaign, even Donald Trump was taking aim at the major drug companies, accusing them of inflating their prices, refusing to cut better deals with volume consumers, such as Medicare, and offshoring much of their production. Even after meeting with industry leaders in late January, now President Trump was only slightly less pointed in his criticism.
So what I want is we have to get lower prices. We have to get even better innovation, and I want you to move your companies back to the United States, and I want you to manufacture in the United States.
Meanwhile, the future of national health care reform is anything but certain in the wake of the Republican-dominated Congress's inability to repeal and replace Obamacare. States like Florida are dealing with many unknowns. So Caitlin Carroll, the public affairs director of the Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, also known as Pharma, was in Tallahassee the other week to provide clarity on the fact that pharma is an economic force in Florida.
Our industry supports more than 149,000 jobs here in Florida. We have almost 30,000 direct jobs. And then we also have, you know, billions of dollars of economic output that helps grow the state. And we want to see that input and output grow. We want to see the industry presence grow here in Florida.
One thing that's undeniably growing is the price of drugs. The average person may notice it when they pick up their prescription at the local CVS or Walgreens, but the entities that really notice the increases are hospitals, which buy their medications by the literal truckload. Take Tallahassee Memorial, whose CEO is Mark O'Brien.
It is a big part of our expense, and it's probably one of the hardest areas to control because you don't negotiate too much with pharma.
Pharma's Carol insists at least part of the cost equation is driven by simple supply and demand.
We want to be seen as an engaging partner on those issues and willing to come to the table to find not just one solution, but a comprehensive solution that addresses our current supply system as it is and ways we can really improve it so that patients are put first.
Hospital Chief O'Brien still questions why, with so many other healthcare cost elements tied to things like Medicare reimbursement rates, drug companies seem immune from that pricing influence.
For whatever reason, and I think probably the biggest reason is they've got the best lobbyist in the world, pharma has been outside of those bounds. There's no set pricing.
Meanwhile, there's the demand side of the pharmaceutical business, a side the industry has been stoking with consumer ads like this TV commercial.
Viberzi is a prescription medication you take every day that helps proactively manage both diarrhea and abdominal pain at the same time.
Tallahassee Memorial's O'Brien isn't a big fan of those ads.
They are master marketers. They push in the open commercial markets new drugs, et cetera, and those drugs are, some of them are extremely expensive and have an impact on the bigger health picture.
Depending on how you define marketing costs, drug companies spend as much as 2 times on advertising and promotion what they spend on research. But the industry's Carol says that marketing is critical, first to let consumers and doctors know about the latest treatments, but also to boost sales, which are vital to support research and development to find cures for such illnesses as cancer and Alzheimer's.
If we want to find those big unknowns and solve those problems, we're going to have to invest a lot of resources in doing so. And that's what drives us, and that's what our companies are committed to.
Meanwhile, industry critics, such as the head of Tallahassee's public hospital and even the president of the United States, would like pharma to be more committed to lowering its drug prices. Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capital Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 14,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. A resource for lawmakers, media, and human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.